Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and it's my pleasure to talk with the legendary chef and restaurateur, Scott Carsberg, about the Seattle restaurant landscape and how it figures in my novel, Inside Passage. More specifically, we'll discuss his restaurants, the Seattle restaurant scene, and how I use restaurants in Inside Passage. Before writing novels, I produced feature films, including Ghost Stories starring Fred Astaire, and Raggedy Man, starring Sissy Spacek. My first novel, Inside Passage, was published in January of this year. My next novel, In Velvet, will be published in the spring of 2014. Scott started in the restaurant business as a busboy at 14 and went on to cook with great chefs in Europe and on the East Coast of the United States. He came home to Seattle, where he opened Lamprea Restaurant in 1992, which the New York Times said is often considered the best in the city. I definitely concur. In 2010, he opened Bisotto. In 2012, he became the executive chef and product developer at Franz Chocolates. Scott is one of the most respected, if not the most respected, chef in the Pacific Northwest, and no one knows the Seattle restaurant world better than he does. Hello, Scott. Welcome.
Hi. How are you, Bert?
I'm good. Let's just start right in by, I want to ask you how you would characterize the Seattle restaurant scene and what makes it unique to Seattle.
Well, one of the things, you know, Seattle is a place where a lot of beverage companies have started. As you know, it's like Starbucks, Red Hook, the craft brewing is really big here, and it's taken off. The food culture early on, using organic products, farms, less formality because it's less threatening, but always the ingredients being the main focus, at least in my kitchens.
And, well, let's talk specifically about Lamprea and the way it fit into the Seattle landscape and how it came to be what it was.
Well, Lamprea was a dream. It started out as a dream for me, trying to do a high-quality restaurant that was focused or chef-driven, meaning that I wrote the menu. It wasn't corporate. At that time, there were more corporate restaurants in Seattle, more chains. And now Seattle's become a more chef-driven and more quality-oriented city in terms of cooking. I was more focused, I think, on the quality of cooking and the ingredients and letting them be simply prepared, less formality, but good service.
When you started out, I don't think there were very many sort of restaurants at that level in Seattle. I mean, there are some of the old institutions like Canlis, and I guess Campania was there. But you kind of broke some new ground, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I was doing more of a modern style of cooking. It wasn't, Caesar salads and things like that, although I think those things now could be modernized and be interesting, which is a lot of chefs are doing worldwide. They're taking the name Caesar, but they're really developing it into a high-quality, way of cooking it, using different kinds of romaine or even using better anchovies. It's all about the ingredients and how you put them together. And when I started out, that's what I focused on, was the individual ingredients. I wasn't trying to be different. I was just trying to develop flavor profiles and salt, sweet, things that the normal palate in this area wasn't really used to.
Well, I think you succeeded in really creating quite a distinctive and unprecedented setting. And let's sort of tie it to my book, Inside Passage, where I use a lot of restaurants. And I want to go through some of them and sort of see how you would characterize them as part of the Seattle restaurant landscape. There's the Queen City Grill, there's Tulio, there's Shuckers, Canlis, El Gaucho, Wild Ginger, and, of course, Lamprea under a different name.
Yeah, you called me Bella.
I did.
Yeah, I like that.
So how do those restaurants, I mean, they're all very different, but they're all uniquely Seattle in some ways.
Right. Well, Canvas is a good example of an institution that's been around for 50 years. I mean, you know, that family's owned it for, as I, you know, quite a long time, and they've managed to develop their cooking, hire a better chef, and now the kids have taken over, and they're doing a really great job, although it's a large space. The other restaurants you mentioned, besides Queen City, they're single-owner restaurants, and some of those are corporate, which means they're run by, you know, a specific group of people, there's investment, and whereas I think as an individual chef, I was more interested in the passion of cooking at that time and developing my my style of cooking, which has become real prevalent right now, as you know, in New York and Brooklyn and places like that.
A couple of the restaurants in the book, including Lamprea, are no longer open. Is that it wouldn't be Campania and Cremant. Why is that? Is that simply that, you know, for various reasons people decided to move on, or is there a change in the restaurant scene?
Well, I think cooking in general, I mean, chefs and so on, I mean, they develop their careers, and some people, they don't want to work that hard any longer, or they found other jobs where they don't have to be responsible. I mean, everybody has their own reason for closing their businesses or stop doing it. It could be the economy. I mean, there's a lot of variables when you own a business. Taxes, it could be parking, it could be, you know, maybe there's too many restaurants, you know, I don't know. It could be that they just got tired and they don't want to put the effort into it.
Well, how do you see the Seattle, let's go back 10 years, and how has the Seattle restaurant world changed in the, or even 15?
Well, I think the food world is, I think people are more educated. I think that the food programs on TV have helped quite a bit educating people. There are more, chefs have become entertainment. We look at Mario Batali, he's in New York, and I know you frequent his restaurants quite often. He's from Seattle. And his father, Armandino, I see him quite often when I pick up fish once in a while at Wajimaya and so on. And that's a perfect example of somebody, you know, who's been able to translate his style of cooking to a bigger market. And Seattle, you know, go ahead, I'm sorry. Yeah, Seattle is, you know, a place where a lot of things have started. Ideas, whether it's Starbucks or, you know, when Bowker started that 15 years ago, nobody knew, or 20 years ago or more, nobody knew what a cup of espresso was. Same with bread. You know, we have Grand Central Baking Company that started out doing, you know, free leavened breads and things like that. And with, of course, where I'm working, France Chocolates, I mean, 30 years ago, you couldn't even get Couverture in Seattle. I mean, she was sourcing her chocolate, you know, up into Canada to get her her ideas played. And now, I mean, it's the caramels, the President of the United States, that's his favorite confection, you know. And chocolate is one of those things that's like coffee now. It's, everyone's making bean to bar. Look at Mars Brothers in Brooklyn. You know, and Dylan started that. Dylan Bigelow was one of the first people to start Bean to Bar in San Francisco with Schraffenberger, and he developed those profiles. So, you know, it's, Seattle really is one of those cities where you can start something and work really hard, and then I think you can take it to a bigger market and become successful. I think Mario Batali is an example of that.
How do you feel the restaurants work in the book, Inside Passage?
Oh, I think it's really sexy. I think this guy Nick, I don't know if I want to hang out with him, but you talk about a sociopath. I mean, he reminds me of those guys from El Bistro. You know, I mean, you took some of these characters, man, and they're like, you know, it's very interesting. I enjoyed it. And the streets and everything, you really captured our city. And, you know, everyone's real proud of you here, you know.
Well, that's great.
You're still the man.
There's some way in which the restaurants, for me, really show something special about Seattle. I mean, the variety.
It does. I think you hit it on the head. I mean, like, you know, early on you would say, I go to Queen City because I like the music and I like the cocktails. You know, and you there were things about Wild Ginger that you'd always express to me you thought were fantastic. You know, Rick Yoder put the jazz club in there way ahead of his time. You know, Campania had certain things you liked. And then, of course, Lamprea, you know, you'd come in, you'd sit at table 10, and you would have that veal chop.
I would, yeah.
And those invariably are the things you enjoy. Pardon?
Yeah, no, I think that comes through in the book.
Totally. I mean, you feel, you know that ambiance. You got the vibe you wanted. And so there were a selection of restaurants where you could go and get a different feel. that were, you know, or a dish that you wanted that was consistent.
Right. Whereas, well, but it's also saying something about Seattle, which in some people's view is a bland city, when in fact it's not that at all. There's all these special places in Seattle that are distinctly different from one from the other.
Well, Seattle's a city that doesn't promote itself. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, we're taught to keep our head down and do our job and do really well. And, you know, I think you got that vibe too. And at a certain point, you know, we do other things here. We have activities. People go snow skiing. You know, they go in the mountains. They go on the lakes. They you know, for a city this size with, you know, I think we're up to 800,000 people or more, but and growing by leaps and bounds, as you know, with Amazon and, you know, not just Microsoft anymore, and all this biotech and research and R&D here. And, I mean, we're developing, we're moving to a new location here at Franz down in, I don't know if you remember Georgetown, but we're going into the old brew house, the old brew house, which was the largest brewing facility west of the Mississippi back in its time.
Huh.
And, yeah, and we've doing a huge renovation there and working on that. So there's great opportunity here for if you have great ideas. And there's a lot of interesting people and smart people live here as well. But if you have a great idea, the marketplace is New York, obviously. There's just pure human flesh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, millions.
And the amount of money.
Exactly. I mean, just a couple of addresses, you know, in Madison Avenue, you're there.
Let me go back, though, to something you said earlier that I found very interesting. Would you say that the sophistication of people who go out to dinner in Seattle has changed in the last 5-10 years?
I do. I think it has. Like, for example, even with chocolate, we see it. You know, what we believe is that, you know, chocolate is it's a flavor, not a sweetener. And so these people's palates have changed dramatically, and they've developed these flavors and what things are supposed to taste like and the quality. They're seeking out quality. Tourists buy hats and T-shirts. You know, I like everything as long as it's the best. And I think there's a lot of quality people here. It's not as dense, but they're searching out quality, and they tell you they are. And with technology, whether it's Yelp or anything, I mean, you're out there. Look at what we're doing now. We're doing actual interview online. Now, who would have thought of that? I mean, that's amazing.
No, it is. It is. And I'd like to go back to your restaurant, though, because I think that you sort of started a lot of things in Seattle in the restaurant world. And you really distinguished yourself as somebody who sort of took his own path. And, you know, as you put it, I mean, you put your head down and you did the work. And it showed in the food. It showed in the, you know, the presentation, in the way the restaurant felt and the way you participated and interacted with people in the restaurant. And I think you changed the sort of way people go out in Seattle, and I want to make sure that you get the credit for that.
Oh, I appreciate it. You're going to make me tear up here. But I think what I've learned is I can always do better, but I always I have the same respect for a potato as I do a lobster, and I don't want to be pretentious. I just want to do a better job, and it's a very humbling profession that I've chosen. Very humbling, because every day I come in and I try to do better, and I want to do better. And when I make a mistake, it's hard for me to even sometimes sleep if I make a mistake. I want to improve, so not a mistake, but I want to learn. And I think it's hard for myself. I mean, it's I still want to learn. I mean, that's my goal, is just continue to learn and develop and be around this like-minded people that understand that. And I think that's important to me, that I'm learning all the time. It keeps my passion alive. And you can't teach passion.
What are the restaurants that you like in Seattle now? And when you go out, where do you go? And what is it about them that you like?
Well, I like Shiro. He's a sushi cutter. He was adjacent to my old spot, and the reason I like Shiro is he's also ingredient driven. I mean, he's a master with the knife. He knows how to cut. He's there almost every day still, and he's in his 70s. And I always learn something when I watch him. The way he uses his knife, and the way he moves, and it's like a ballet watching him work, and it's a pleasure, and I really enjoy it.
Are there others?
My house. My house.
I bet.
No, I like. Well, I do. I do enjoy Shiro. I think Daisley at Marche is trying hard. He does a nice job. You know, I work different hours now, so I haven't been out recently. But I also think the guys at Canlis are really driving hard. I think, you know, the two boys there are really trying to move forward. And see, I believe in fine cooking, not fine dining. You know, that's I really believe in fine cooking. I think fine dining is great and service, but I want to, and I do like a Ferrari, but I do believe that fine cooking is something, it's a real craft, and it's becoming more prevalent now, especially in the States. You know, they have a tradition of this in Europe. I mean, they have the Guide Michelin, they have Boumillon, they have, you know, all that. But I really think that America is a place where you can really be free and not be such a squarehead in the kitchen necessarily and have these rules. And I think rules are there and they're important for structure, but I also believe you need your freedom to be creative. And being creative doesn't mean you do something to be different. You do something to be consistently great. And how can you make it better? How do you elevate it? How do you make it better? What can I do to make it better? Whether it's better ingredient. I mean, we have some guys here from a company called Falcon, and this guy, Stefan, they're creating chocolate that's fantastic and all organic and a lot of it's single origin, and a lot of these things are traceable. They're one of the only companies that you can trace every ingredient that goes into their products. And that's the kind of thing I like to work with, people that are pushing the envelope, trying to do better, and increasing their knowledge by looking and talking to everybody, whether it's the person picking the beans or the guy making the prep. I mean, every step that I've taken in my life has always been to learn. Now, money's a good motivator, as we know. But passion, when you're feeling tired, passion is what drives me, period.
Well, I think it shows. How do you think a guy like Danny Meyer, who has taken New York by storm, would do in Seattle?
You know, these corporate places, they never seem to make it here, as you know. It's strange. Wolfgang Puck tried. They got a guy, Michael Minas, here. I don't know how he's doing. The people, but more and more people are moving here from other places, so I think some of those places would do well. You know, Mario Batali's from here. Everybody's wondered why he never opened a restaurant in Seattle. I mean, there's a reason that they don't open here. You know, I mean, you have, as I said, you have Pure Flesh. You know, you've got, you know, 20-something million people living there, another 50 million in tourism a year in New York. In Seattle, if we get 300,000 or 400,000 or maybe a million, we're lucky. You know, and we have neighborhoods still here. You know, we have West Seattle, we have Capitol Hill, you know, your area, Madison, you know, Washington Park where you lived. You know, and then, of course, Bainbridge Island, where you had your place too, you know, which was beautiful. So, I mean, you know the terroir here. You know what's going on. It's like a beautiful woman you can never touch. Or vice versa. You know what I mean. I mean, your kids went to school here, Lakeside, you know, and, I mean, you grew up here too. I mean, you kids grew up here. I mean, you know exactly what, you know, we're very, you know, Seattle is, you know, it's so many things. It's a love hate, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly not what it seems to be. And there's complexity where you don't expect it. And there's, you know, sometimes denial.
Kind of stuff. Yeah,
I can hear you, Scott.
Yeah, kind of denial and stuff. Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah.
And I don't think one of the things behind the Danny Meyer question is, you know, his whole thing is hospitality, and it's not, you know, the food in his restaurants is good, but, you know, he is a sort of makes a point of training people to
it's a whole package. Yeah,
but
no,
I'm not sure that would do that well in Seattle. I'm not sure people want the attention.
I agree. I think that's what I was saying earlier, you know, with the Basado concept. It did really well, and I think that I did fine cooking, not fine dining.
Let's talk about Visado a little bit more, because I think it's an interesting Seattle landmark. Could you tell me a little more about it?
Well, yeah.
The Genesis.
Well, what I was trying to do at that point with Lamprey, I mean, not just to find out anything, but you know, we were in a situation in 07. I had some property I was going to purchase and move lumber actually into this building, and the bank I was using for the loans went south, and so I had to quickly retool my location. And so Hyunju and I, my wife, we decided that we would do something more casual, but, you know, more of a bar, but high quality, same, you know, ingredient-driven cuisine, you know, but still give that same quality at a reasonable price to get us through the downturn. And it did very well. And it was something that, you know, I think it could be anywhere. We could have dropped it off anywhere and it would have done okay. You know, we retooled the website. But we did the same quality. We just didn't have the guys in the monkey suits, you know, pouring the wine or, you know what I mean? We just kept those guys. We kept the guys knowledgeable, but we made it respectful and casual, but still, you know, it was a real food-driven restaurant concept.
And if I'm remembering right, I mean, I was never there, but weren't you in the center cooking?
Yeah, we renovated. It was almost a complete 180 bar, which was unusual for any restaurant because it's hard to do that. It's a math equation to do a bar like that, and it completely curved all the way around the entire space. It was long, and it was actually really beautiful. And the cooking island was right in the center of that, and it had a work table in the center that was made out of this wood, and then I got an old barn door that was 100 years old that I used to shoot my BB gun at when I was a kid on my grandfather's property, and we stuck that in the center. And actually, it's still on the Basada website. There's some photos there, but it was really a beautiful space, and I enjoyed cooking in it. I really enjoyed it, and I kind of got my legs back when we renovated it. I got excited, and the menu was broken down into just real simple, ingredient-driven. And I keep saying that, you know, because, I mean, we always had farms, you know. Now farm-to-table is the big thing. You know, we were using Lambrecci's in Skagit Valley. I had 3 acres to my help, to whatever I wanted, whether it was alpine berries. I had all the seeds. I did zucchini flowers. I mean, everything back then. So this farm thing is nothing new to chefs out here. We've always cooked like that. The farmer's market, as you know, in Pike Place is huge. So it's right in the center of the city. So everybody would bring everything in the season. And I could walk 3 blocks from my location and pick everything I want and make friends with all these people. So I was very fortunate to work in an area like this where you have all this beautiful produce and fish and growing my chickens and my meat and my eggs for my pasta and everything. And stunning. Just beautiful stuff.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you about Seattle and restaurants. It sort of brings back a lot, and I hope that I was able to capture some of that in my book.
I think it's lovely. I think it's a great thriller. And, you know, the Inside Passage is, you know, I went through the Inside Passage on a fishing boat up to Alaska.
I do know that.
Yeah, and it was a real experience. I mean, everybody should do it that's been a bad boy. if you've been a bad boy and you're running through the Gulf of Alaska in a 40-foot swells, you'll in a 48-foot purse seiner, you're going to learn something different about life. I'm telling you. Make sure you wear a diaper.
All right. Now, I'm going to wind this down. I want to tell people where you can go to www.BurtWeissbord.com, and that will get you to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Powell's, or there's any number of places where you can order the book. And you can also just go to Amazon and look for Inside Passage. Scott, I want to thank you. It's very wonderful to sort of listen to you talk about Seattle and restaurants. And we'll do this again.
Thanks for the opportunity. Take care. Say hi to everyone.
Okay. Thanks, Scott.
Bye. Okay. Ciao.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were sorting through the
footsteps at the front door. And that old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. Trouble at the depot with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know.